Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dan Heim. I'm a Senior Vice President at NEASA, and I'm joined by a number of my NEASA colleagues here. We thank you for joining us on fairly short notice for this New York State budget briefing. But I can assure you there's a lot of very interesting proposals in this state budget, and we felt it was very important to get out to you very quickly with the best information that we have at this point in time. We will be following up with a number of communications with you in the very near future, but we wanted to make sure that you were aware of many of the proposals that we've already identified in the state budget based on our own analysis of the bills as well as some briefings that we've had with the governor's office and other individuals. The governor did officially release his budget today for state fiscal year 2010-11. It totals $133.9 billion. That's an increase of about $800 million or about 0.6% over the 2009-10 budget. As such, it's below the level of inflation. It's below the spending cap that the governor himself proposed very recently. And it's intended to close a budget gap of $7.4 billion. If you recall, the 2009-10 budget has ended with a roughly $500 million deficit that has to be closed in the context of this budget. The budget does recommend a gap-closing package in health care of $1.9 billion. We'll be going through a number of the proposals that make up that package. All of the materials related to the budget are, in fact, posted now on the Division of the Budget website, including all of the Article 7 bills and appropriation bills, as well as all the memos in support, the budget briefing books. Certainly any member of the public or any of our members are encouraged to take a look at that material. You can find that at budget.state.ny.us. We have already put out a response, which we emailed out to all of you on the budget in a press release. In a nutshell, what we had to say was that that we do agree with a number of the directions that the budget does contemplate, which is to look at the whole question of Medicaid eligibility, look at the ability to diversify services and revenue streams within long-term care. Those are things that we said in our recent State of the State of Long-Term Care. But in the short term, further cuts are going to disrupt our ability and our members' ability to be able to move in those directions that I think we all agree are very much necessary. It would be, I think, a good juncture at this point to hear a little bit of the political analysis around the budget and the atmosphere that we find ourselves in now from our outside lobbyist, Rich Leckerling of Whiteman, Osterman & Hanna. Following Rich's remarks, then a number of us on staff will go through some specific proposals that are in the budget. We'll then have time for questions that you may have on any of those proposals or anything else related to the budget. And then we'll finish up with a discussion about grassroots advocacy and some of the initiatives that we're involved with there, and then close out with any further questions you might have. So, Rich, what's your takeaway as far as your initial reaction to the budget and what this will mean for both the governor and the legislature?
Thanks, Dan, and hi, everybody. We start off this budget as if we've been doing the budget in the round for the past 6 months, and we really have. The governor has been coming forth with what is now a term that everybody in Albany knows, the DRPs, the deficit reduction plans. We've gone through three deficit reduction plans since we last finished the budget, and this budget just represents the next installment of what seems to be constant budgeting. What it's done, though, is set up a tone and a rancor in Albany that makes a sane settling of a projected $7.4 billion budget deficit very, very difficult. The hot issue today, in addition to the introduction of the budget, was the whole issue of race to the top and whether and how New York State will amend its laws relating to charter schools to try to draw down $700 million in federal funds under the Race to the Top program. The governor and both houses of the legislature have been at odds on that subject, and it's not likely between now and 4:30, which is in about 20 minutes, when the application has to be filed, that they're going to come up with an amicable settlement on that issue. And that's already poisoned the well that was poisoned last fall in terms of the deficit reduction plans, the withholding of funds, and the general the degradation of relations between the executive and the legislative branch. The Senate remains a very unstable majority of 32 seats held by the Democrats currently, but it is anything but a sure thing that they will be able to hold their majority and deliver the votes that they need to deliver. The Republican minority, the 30-seat Republican minority, is basically sitting there able to hang together and govern or to stay united on the issues that they care about. What that does for the budget it makes it all very, very difficult. You've got the $1.9 billion in cuts that the governor has outlined in terms of the healthcare industry. He's also cut $1 billion out of school aid, which will be a sure lightning rod for the Long Island Republican members, for which school aid cuts are an anathema. They're also hiding behind this whole budget is about $1 billion in revenue actions that the governor recommends, including a $1 tax on cigarettes, another attempt to what they're calling this year the soft drink syrup excise tax, which would raise revenue. It's basically like last year's soda tax that didn't make it. And he also has a provision to raise almost $100 million this year by allowing grocery stores to sell wine. The reason those three revenue actions and that $1 billion that he raises in revenue actions are important is if you ask the Division of the Budget and the Governor's Office, they think they were relatively gentle in their cuts towards the healthcare industry this year. From where they sit, it could have been a lot worse if they didn't come up with those revenues. If any or all of the revenue pieces fall apart in the consideration with the legislature, that only digs a deeper hole in the budget, which they would have to fill. And where would they go to try to fill those but back to healthcare and back to education, which is where the money is. So if this little political take doesn't paint an exactly rosy picture of the atmosphere that we're going to be working in, it's just because that's what we've been dealt. You have the specter of a election coming up where there's real doubt whether the governor will be able to withstand a potential challenge from Andrew Cuomo, the attorney general, who has raised five times more in the way of campaign contributions than the governor has. And there's also already talk of a challenge from Steve Levy, the Suffolk County executive. So all of these things have coincided in an election year where all 211 legislators will be up for election. A governor whose re-election chances are under question at this point and a $7.4 billion budget deficit kind of give you a perfect storm of factors that are going to make this very treacherous in terms of how we move forward going forward. Dan, you want to take it from there?
Yes, that's great. Thanks very much, Rich, for setting the table. What I'd like to do now is go through the proposed nursing home, adult day health care, and home care proposals, and I'll welcome other folks here on the staff to supplement anything that I'll say, and then after that we'll delve into assisted living, ACF, housing, and State Office for the Aging programs. In terms of the nursing home measures, there are some new ones in here. There are ones that we've seen before. Relatively quickly, the first proposal the governor makes is to cap the amount of rate appeals that can be certified in the 2010-11 fiscal year and also in the following year at $80 million a year, and then authorize DOH to prioritize their processing of rate appeals and also to negotiate settlements with facilities that are facing financial problems. We saw very similar proposals on capping rate appeals and actually enacted law on this several years ago, so this is not the first time that the state has tried to cap rate appeals. This would not necessarily be a cut and probably would not be a cut, although we'll try to get more specifics on it. It appears at this point to really be more of a cash flow delay on the state's part, and it wouldn't obviate the need for them to eventually process these rate appeals. The estimated state savings from that action is $16.5 million. Because of the associated loss of federal funds, the impact on overall funding would be roughly $40 million in the 2010-11 state fiscal year. The second proposal relating to nursing homes has to do with bed hold days. And if you remember in last year's budget, there was an assumption that regulations would be promulgated that would reduce bed hold payments to nursing homes from 100% of the rate to 75% of the rate, and would also increase the occupancy percentage needed to claim bed hold from 95 to 97%. Those regulations have not been promulgated. They're still in the governor's office of reg reform. This proposal, which would be made in law, would reduce the bed hold payment to 95% of the nursing home rate by statute, and it would limit the amount of bed hold days that could be claimed on any individual to 14 days per year for hospitalizations and 10 days per year for therapeutic leaves. So it would impose limitations on the number of bed hold days for each individual. It's not clear whether or not this would have a bearing on the regulatory requirement for facilities to continue holding a bed after the payment has lapsed. We don't know the answer to that, nor do we know how this proposal intersects with the pending regulations that are under review now. Pediatric facilities would be excluded from this this newest proposal to limit bed hold days. The third proposal is to increase the cash receipts assessment to 7%. And we see across the health budget that there are proposals to increase most of the assessments and surcharges. In this case, the nursing home assessment would be increased from the current level of 6% of all operating income and other assessable operating receipts to 7%. The additional 1% increase would not be Medicaid reimbursable. However, the existing 6% would continue to be Medicaid reimbursed, and all other rules and requirements relating to the program would remain in place. The increase in the assessment would generate an estimated $68 million to the state, and that would be a dollar-for-dollar savings because there is no Medicaid involved in that one. Going back to the bed hold cut, the estimated state savings is $6.9 million and roughly a $17 million impact estimated on providers or on recipients in this case potentially as well. The next proposal is to remove drug costs from the nursing home rates, remaining drug costs. As you know, most of the prescription drug costs are effectively excluded from nursing home payments because of Medicare Part D. However, there are some remaining drugs in the rate. The state wants to remove those from the nursing home rate and pay them on a fee-for-service basis. The benefit to the state in doing so would be to make those drugs eligible for drug rebates that the state gets on other fee-for-service drugs in the Medicaid program. So we don't necessarily know whether or not this would be a cut to provider funding. We'll need to get more details, but on the surface it sounds more like it will just be a change in the method of payment. The estimated state savings on this is $2.4 million, and we're, again, not sure what the provider impact is. We'll have to ascertain that. The next proposal on nursing homes is one that we're seeing across the board for all Medicaid providers, and that's to eliminate the remaining 2010 trend factor. The trend factor under existing law would be 1.7% beginning April 1st, 2010, and continuing through the end of the calendar year. As you recall, in the deficit reduction plan that was enacted back in November, the first 3 months of the 2010 trend factor were eliminated. This proposal would carry forth that elimination through the balance of the fiscal year, and the impact on nursing homes would be the state savings, rather, would be $46.6 million, and the estimated provider impact would be about $114 million. And you'll hear this proposal carried through on other provider types as well. And then finally, delay in regional pricing. The administration in the DRP had proposed to delay the implementation of regional pricing. We're seeing that same proposal here again. The budget would extend the existing rebasing, and in fact, all of you just saw your Medicaid rates, if you run nursing homes, for rebasing come out last week. So those rebasing rates would continue through February 28th of 2011, and then effective March 1st, 2011, a new regional pricing system would go into place. So this would be an 11-month delay in regional pricing. However, it would the state would move forward more immediately with a quality incentive funding pool of up to $50 million effective April 1st, 2010. This is an issue that NEASA has been working on extensively with the state through the work group. That $50 million would not be new money, unfortunately. It would come out of the $210 million of additional resources that were allotted as part of the rebasing legislation as modified by last year's budget. They also are suggesting a change that the January 2010 MDS snapshot, which would not currently be used for case mix changes, would in fact be used to change the case mix effective January 1st, 2010, since regional pricing would be delayed by that 11-month period. There is no fiscal associated with this delay in regional pricing or with those associated provisions. It all would be done on a budget-neutral basis. So overall, on the nursing home side, $140 million in state savings in the current fiscal year, increasing to $162.8 million next year. And provider impact, again, to be determined. There are a few of those measures that we're not entirely sure how they would impact providers. Very hard to estimate. The cash flow delay associated with the delay in rate appeals processing is an example of that. And the bed hold, we're not sure how that plays out or carving drugs out of the rate. So there are still several unanswered questions that we're going to be seeking to get more information on. Jumping over to very quickly, adult day health care. Adult day health care is affected or would be affected by the 1% increase in the cash receipts assessment that affects nursing homes. That would also affect adult day health services. Similarly, the elimination of the trend factor for 9 months, the 1.7% 2010 trend factor, would also affect rates of payment for adult day health care. And the it's something we haven't talked about yet, but there's a proposed cap on personal care services, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, that could potentially have an impact on adult day health care. And there also is a proposal to standardize the method that the state uses to obtain transportation services for Medicaid recipients, and we're not sure to what degree that could affect adult day health care as well. But at this point, we can confirm that the assessment and the trend factor proposals would, in fact, affect adult day health care programs. Jumping over now to home care, there are some proposals in home care that we've seen before and some other fairly new ones and wrinkles on previous ones that we've seen before as well. The first proposals on home care are to eliminate the trend factor, and as I mentioned earlier, under nursing homes, the remaining trend factor for 2010, from April 1st, 2010 till the end of the calendar year, would be eliminated. That is a 1.7% trend factor. The impact combined on home care and personal care would be $25.8 million. I'm sorry, that's the state savings. The provider impact would be more in the realm of $63 million on programs. The second proposal is one that we saw back in the deficit reduction plan. That would be to increase the cash receipts assessment on personal care providers, CHAs, long-term home health care programs, and licensed agencies. The current assessment is 0.35%, would be increased to 0.7%. All those assessments are not reimbursed under Medicaid. They are unreimbursed, so they are a dollar-for-dollar hit on providers. The other thing that the language would do is it would provide some clarification around what happens with delinquent assessments and methods by which the state can collect those delinquencies, similar to language that has been previously enacted for nursing homes. So that is the cash receipts assessment. And for home care, the dollar amount on that is $17.6 million state savings, and that would also be the provider impact because it's an unreimbursed tax. The next proposal is one that is a variation of others that we've seen in the past. It's an attempt to try to control personal care and consumer-directed personal care services cost growth. There are concerns, and we've seen this kind of play out in the context of the home care work group and other forums, where there's concern about the level of utilization of personal care services throughout the state. Under this proposal, any individual who uses 12 hours per day or more of personal care services, or 360 hours a month, those individuals would be redirected into other community-based settings, and particularly settings that have a case management component. Good examples or examples that were cited in the statute include the long-term home health care program, the transition diversion waiver, managed long-term care programs, and there also is a new option in there for participation in the transition diversion waiver even without federal funding. So I think they'd be looking at very high home personal care, high-cost cases to be looking at something along those lines. Nonetheless, the goal here is to try to use case management to create some savings in that program. The estimated state savings on that is $30 million, and the impact on total funding is $73 million. Again, this is one of those ones where it's really hard to determine what's provider impact and what is recipient impact because of the way the services would be limited. Patrick, you had a comment?
Yeah, just wanted to specify, you said 360 hours a month. The language does specifically say an average of 12 hours per day.
Right.
So that would be important to keep in mind. The other thing is it makes an exception for medically necessary personal care services that exceed an average of 12 hours per day, if those services are provided by a CHA or a long-term home health care program. So it's strictly the personal care services, not those that are medically related.
Thank you. There are some other proposals in here as well. There's a proposed savings around some efficiencies, one of which is one that NEASA has supported in the past, which is to extend the time period for a reassessment of long-term home health care program patients from 120 days to 180 days, so they're taking a savings on that, and there are some other savings as well that total up to $0.6 million in state savings for the program. So in total, the proposals affecting home care that would create state savings are $74 million in state share, and again, based on issues that I've mentioned already, the provider impact is a bit hard to determine at this point because where you draw the line between reductions in provider funding versus recipients is a bit hard to draw with the information that we have now. Overall, the level of funding to home care services between providers and recipients would be a bit over $150 million. Now, there are other proposals relating to home care in the budget that don't have a fiscal savings associated with them. And the first, and it's a very important one, is to implement a new episodic payment system. Many of you have followed along the workings of the home health care reimbursement work group. NEASA has been monitoring that process very closely. A draft report was circulating around as well. This proposal, and we're not very surprised that it's in here, would implement an episodic payment system for certified home health agencies effective January 1st, 2012. It would do so on a budget-neutral basis, so there is no state savings associated with this transition. And there are some specifics of the proposal that are not spoken to in the statute, so presumably some of those details would be worked out by the home health care reimbursement work group between now and then. Another proposal in the budget that does not have a fiscal savings per se associated with it is a proposal to increase penalties for licensed home care services agencies that fail to file the required annual cost reports. And we're not sure what that dollar amount is. We can ask, but it's probably a fairly small amount.
$5,000, I think.
Okay. So those are the nursing home, adult day health care, and home care proposals. There is a proposal related to managed long-term care rate setting as well, and it would this proposal would transition the responsibility for rate setting for those managed long-term care services from the insurance department to the Department of Health. Those of you that run the programs know that the department has just rolled out a new methodology, a risk-based methodology for paying the plans. So the statutory authority would seem to be consistent with the direction the department is moving in that area. So with all of that said, let me turn it over to Diane Derbyshire, who can speak to the assisted living and ACF proposals contained in the budget. Diane?
Thank you, Dan. Forgive me, I have a little bit of a cold, so I hope that you can understand me. Before I talk about adult care facilities and assisted living, I did want to just mention another home care proposal. DOH is directed to establish procedures to permit long-term home health care program providers programs, and other waiver services to, and other services which provide case management to collaborate jointly to serve individuals when services of both entities are necessary. Now, this is something that NYASA has been working on with our colleagues to get clarification on, to try to ensure that people who kind of straddle both systems get their needs met. So this is a positive thing. This is also related, I think, to a federal initiative with CMS, so we'll see how that unfolds. But on to adult care facilities and assisted living. Probably one of the biggest changes that we're seeing in the budget there is that the governor is proposing to repeal the quality incentive or QIP program and restructure funding for the Enable program to allocate funding for a new quality program for adult homes. And DOH is directed to develop a methodology for allocation which takes into account financial status as well as resident needs. This seems to be an effort to consolidate like programs. We believe that this is going to be funded in total at $6.9 million, but I'm awaiting DOB confirmation on that. If you look at what the total funding is for QIP and Enable last year, and we are correct about the $6.9 million, then this represents a $3.2 million cut. We suspect that the practical application of this will be that the department will have more discretion on how these funds are distributed as well. We'll certainly report more to members when we learn more details about it. The budget also proposes $1 million for services and expenses associated with the provision of education, assessments, training, and monitoring to residents of adult homes to implement a remediation plan resulting from a 2009 federal court decision. We are under the impression that this is the Disability Advocates, Inc. Lawsuit that we had done some education on earlier, a few months back, actually. This really relates to impacted homes, so we believe that these services will really be targeted to the mentally ill population residing in adult homes. The budget also allocates just over $2.1 million for oversight and licensing activities for assisted living. This represents a $1 million increase. The SSI enriched housing subsidy was level funded at $502,000. Pardon me. In terms of the assisted living program, or the ALP, As Dan had talked about in other programs, there's the elimination of the 2010 trend factor. Now, you'll recall that the budget actions of last year brought the ALP rates down to 2007 rates. So if this goes through, then that would keep the ALP rates at 2007 rates for this year. An interesting provision of the budget is a direction for DOH to do a study on ALP rates. And basically, they're directing them to collect data from a uniform assessment tool and gather data and determine the effectiveness of the evaluation of residents and how it relates to ALP rates. We're pleased to see this. This is, I think, based on an idea that we proposed, given that we've heard from members that ALP rates are not adequate and that the assessment tool does not do an accurate job of collecting the data necessary to reimburse appropriately. There's two other provisions that I think Dan will talk about later that have a potential impact on ALPs, and that's the expansion of the voluntary right-sizing demonstration to authorize the conversion of an additional 2,500 nursing home beds to other long-term care options. So that would include the ALP, the long-term home health care program, adult day health care. The other proposal is relates to county nursing homes and incentives, but I'll let him speak to that later. I will then turn it over to Ken Harris to talk about housing provisions.
Thank you, Diane. I'd like to start out by talking about the budget as it pertains to the Division of Housing and Community Renewal. The budget includes combining administrative functions of both DHCR and New York Homes, which was formerly known as the Housing Finance Agency, estimating these savings of combining the administrative functions to be $3.5 million. The proposal also includes the consolidation of the DHCR commissioner, who resigned last Friday, Deborah Van Amerongen, and the New York Homes president, who resigned about a month ago. And those will be performed in the interim by Brian Lawler. The budget also calls for the Nursing Home Transition Diversion Waiver Housing Subsidy Program to be level funded at $2.3 million. It's a relatively new program that allows for housing subsidies similar to the Section 8 program for the waiver participants. Low-income housing tax credit program is level funded at $4 million. Access to home, which was previously both a budget item and receiving funds from the Housing Trust Fund Corporation earned fees, is not a budget item this year, but there is an RFP out through DHCR for this program. It's not specified on how much that program is, but we have a call into DHCR. We anticipate it's going to be level funded at $4 million. Housing Trust Fund level funded at $29 million. The Affordable Housing Corporation level funded at $25 million. The weatherization program, which received $253 million from the federal government through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the ARRA, last year, that money was, many of our members applied for that funding. The budget has in for this year $174 million. It's anticipated, it is probably carryover funding from last year that wasn't spent from the ARA. There is a program called the Public Housing Modernization Program, which is level funded at $12.8 million. Yet this money is for municipal housing authorities only and also for state-aided developments, our Mitchell Lama programs, that do not receive federal housing operation subsidies, the Section 8, or direct subsidy. So that's the DHCR budget relevant to our members. I'd like to move on to the New York State Office for Aging budget. The Congregate Services Initiative Program was funded last year at $106,000. It provided for information and assistance, referral, transportation, services and congregate settings, this program is proposed to be eliminated. The Patient Rights Hotline and Advocacy Project, $63,000, not a big program, but it is also proposed to be eliminated. The SNAP program, which provides home-delivered meal funding and some congregate meal funding through NYSOFA, is proposed to take a $2 million cut to $21.3 million. Enriched Social Adult Day Service Program is a new program, which is being level funded in the budget at $245,000. NORC and Neighborhood NORC, which is Naturally Occurring Retirement Communities, and the Neighborhood Naturally Occurring Retirement Communities, are being level funded at a little over $2 million each. The Community Empowerment Program is being level funded at $245,000, as is the Social Day Program's level funded at $872,000. And that's it for both DHCR and NYSOFA programs.
Okay, thanks, Ken. I wanted to, this is Dan again, just finish up with a few programs that kind of cross different long-term care services, and then we'll open up the line for questions and conclude with some discussion about grassroots and where we go from here. There is a fairly interesting proposal in the budget that something we've talked with the administration about fairly recently, and it's a proposal, something modeled after the F-SHARP agreement with the federal government. In this case, it would be the department getting federal approval or trying to seek federal approval for a demonstration program that would be designed to achieve savings and efficiencies in serving individuals who are dually eligible for both Medicaid and Medicare for long-term care services, hospital care, and other medical care. And not a lot of specifics at this point. We'll be having some more discussion with the administration on that, but it is a concept that we're very interested in and that we threw out there before the budget. A second proposal is one that is modeled after legislation that was that's been proposed the last few legislative sessions, known in kind of short or in terminology as the Long-Term Care Compact. The legislation here doesn't refer to it in that using that name, but basically this would be a demonstration project in long-term care financing for up to 5,000 individuals, using alternative approaches for determining eligibility for long-term care services under Medicaid. It would allow individuals to protect some amount of assets, and in exchange for doing that, they would pledge to spend certain amounts of their assets on long-term care services. So it works somewhat similarly to the long-term care insurance partnership that we've had in New York State for several years. It's a concept that we certainly believe has merit, and we're interested to see it in the budget here. It does seek to move us in a direction that we are very much in favor in, which is in bringing more private dollars into the system. There is also a demonstration. This would be in up to five counties for what they're calling a county long-term care financing demonstration program. The intent of this program would be to encourage transformation of county nursing home beds into other long-term care options. It would include incentives to the counties to make those transitions, and also it would include incentives for hard-to-place individuals who may be residing in county nursing homes in order to have them placed into other long-term care facilities and programs. So that proposal was in there as well. And as Diane mentioned a moment ago, and this is something we had been seeking as well, a proposal to expand the voluntary nursing home right-sizing demonstration program from 2,500 slots up to 5,000. There is a proposal in here as well to increase the number of transitional care unit demonstrations, and these are demonstrations within hospitals to serve individuals who are Medicare beneficiaries who need subacute care, nursing home level services. This proposal would increase the number of demonstration sites from 5 to 10 and would increase the or lengthen the program from the current 5 years in law, would be expiring this year, to 10 years. So it would move the program out by an additional 5 years. We've been on record several times before opposing that proposal. We do not believe that these units are serving individuals necessarily that nursing homes couldn't be serving. So with that said, and we've thrown a lot at you here, we'd like to open up the line, operator, for any questions that any folks would have on anything that we covered, as well as any other questions related to the budget.
Yes, sir. At this time, if you have a question or comment, please press 1 on your touch-tone phone now. Please only press 1 once. If you press it twice, it will remove you from the queue. One moment while I get our first question. Our first question will come from Jim Dewhurst.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jim.
Question regarding the quality incentive pool and how that $50 million would have an impact on the 210. Do you folks have any way of identifying what that might translate to on a per bed basis or per Medicaid day, or how that's going to have an impact on these new rates that were just issued?
Jim, we really don't. We need to get more information on that. The statute that they're relying upon for the program is very general, and all it says that it will take into account quality measures and staffing and survey results. It doesn't talk in very specific terms at all about how those categories will be weighted, what data elements would be used. As you probably know, Jim is a member of the Joint Association Task Force that we have developed counterproposals to the state's proposals because we don't believe that they will drive the dollars in a way that's consistent with what we're trying to achieve. We can find out, and we're going to be having a briefing with the Department of Health on Friday on the nursing home proposals. We'll find out if they've done a run to determine, at least based on their latest proposal, where those dollars would go, and we could then make that information available to the members so that they could see how those dollars might be redirected and what bearing that might have on the rebasing rates.
Is the $50 million carved in stone?
I don't know that it is, Jim. I think, just their proposal. That number has precedent only because it was a number that was thrown out previously. There is nothing in law as it stands today. So I believe, based on our discussions with the department, that they would be flexible on that number because these are not new dollars anyway. They're dollars that are going to come out of the base.
Yeah, it just strikes me as being overly aggressive with $50 million going to 20% of the surveys, which equates to about 120 facilities in the state.
Right.
And it seems like a disproportionate share.
Mm-hmm. Sure. We've had those discussions before in the JATF, certainly.
Right.
Yep.
Thanks.
Sure.
Okay, our next question will come from Leo Asen.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Leo.
Any information about the HEAL money?
We have not found any discussion at this point of HEAL money. We're still obviously looking through all this stuff. I had a discussion with some DOH officials last week, and at this point in time, they seem to still be fairly up in the air as far as what their plans are around HEAL. And as you can imagine, the recent DRP delayed HEAL payments to certain providers, and there's a process underway now to try to establish a queue for how those dollars will get issued. So some of that uncertainty is having a bearing on kind of the broader question around HEAL. I suspect that if there were any HEAL appropriations made in this budget, that we will find them, and we'll at least be able to see what dollar amount has been associated with the program. But we're going to need further information from the department as far as what their plans are, because they've expressed a desire to put out more dollars for health information technology. They've expressed some interest in putting dollars out for the whole initiative to limit or to reduce nursing home beds in favor of assisted living. So how those dollars all get put out there, we're really not sure.
Thanks, Dan.
Yep.
At this time, I have no further questions in the queue.
Okay. Let me turn it over to Alyssa Lovelace, who can who'll speak about our Partners in Quality program and our grassroots initiatives and what we'll be asking members to do in the very near future.
Hi, everybody. This is Alyssa. In regards to the budget, I just want to let everybody know that we are working on and will post to the Legislative Action Center a generic letter pertaining to the budget and cuts to long-term care. And with that, we ask you to please send these letters to your elected officials once they're posted. Also, we are working on creating a publication that consists of stories of those affected by the budget cuts. If you have someone who'd be willing to share their story who you think be perfect for this, please let us know. We will be getting more details out to you about this. In regards to Partners in Quality, we have over 200 advocates signed up for our Families and Friends Network. We're hoping for a lot more than this. So we ask that you please sign up, one name, two names, as many names as you'd like to come in for our Families and Friends Network. That would be great. Simply just send me this individual's contact information, and I will get in touch with the advocate from there. We also ask that you choose a date for a legislative reception, and with that, you get to build relationships with your elected official. You simply choose a date. We will give you an award to present to your elected officials, and try to go outside of the box. Work with somebody who, you know, who you haven't before. Present the awards to somebody who you haven't, and from there you can build a relationship. Your legislators would really appreciate the honor. Also, in terms of Lobby Day, it will be on Wednesday, March 3rd, so keep your eye out for a registration for. In regards to the Partners in Quality, also just keep in mind that these awards are for federal and state lawmakers and can also be given to county lawmakers as well. With that, I will turn it on over to Dan Heim.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Alyssa. Rich, any closing thoughts or comments from your perspective in terms of advocacy in the context of this budget?
I just cut off the call. No, still there.
That's a good comment.
Hey, Dan?
Yes.
I just tried to take you off speaker, and I almost cut off the entire call.
Oh, don't do that.
No, really, only that, you know, the situation that I outlined at the beginning of this conversation and then the whole litany of the cuts, they're going to need to hear from you in a big way because everyone is going to be voicing their concerns. So following up in the ways that Alyssa outlined and just making sure that your local legislators, both the senators and assembly people, have an understanding of what these cuts are going to mean to you is incredibly important. You know, it's the old saw of the squeaky wheel, and if we're not squealing as hard as we can, we're going to get lost in the cacophony of complaints about this budget. So it's incredibly important that you do it, and, you know, we'll be doing our part here in the building, but it's incredibly important that they hear from you out in the district and that they really understand what these cuts are going to mean because they just look like numbers on a sheet of paper unless they get it outline for them.
Okay, thanks a lot, Rich. And we will be putting out more information in the coming days. We're working on impact estimates at the provider level on the cuts, and we hope to have those out by the end of this week so that you can utilize that information. We'll be putting information up on the Legislative Action Center and letters on CAPWIS for you to utilize in your efforts. So with that, I'll open it up or ask the operator to open up for any last-minute questions that folks may have before we sign off.
We do have a question from Ira Green.
Okay.
Yeah. Hi, Dan and everybody. Actually, you answered my first question about the financial impacts, So we'll wait to see what those look like. But with respect to rate appeals and authorized settlements, two things. First off, I guess I'm going to assume that rate appeals are being processed, that they're actually looking to cap them, and they're probably processing greater than this value of $16.5 million.
What they're saying in the budget is that they're going to impose a cap of $80 million per year. So what they're saying is that by putting a cap of $80 million per year on, that they're going to save the $16 million.
So I didn't realize that they were processing. I haven't seen one in a number of years.
Obviously, as we all know, rate appeals are a huge problem. There are over 5,000 outstanding rate appeals. The Joint Association Task Force put a proposal into the department, this was a while ago, aimed at trying to make a dent in that backlog and to try to obviate as many of the current appeals as we could. So we're a bit discouraged that some of those measures haven't been proposed or put into place. The statute or the proposed law here really doesn't say a whole lot about how this would all work other than the fact that it does impose the cap and it does give the department the discretion to prioritize appeals for providers that are having financial hardship and also to negotiate some sort of settlements, not only on the appeals but on any assessment monies that may be owed by the facility. So that's about as far as it goes, and we don't know exactly how this will work in practice. We hope to get some more detail on it on Friday in our briefing.
So, So aside from prioritizing those facilities that may have be in financial difficulty, is there any other prioritization? For instance, facilities that may have undergone some CON capital, improvements that we would, want to get that first year's capital. Is that something that would be prioritized, or just sit on the list of until they get around to it?
Actually, the language that they're proposing does say it talks about capital appeals. It doesn't put them into the same category as financial hardship, but I would venture to say, based on past practice, that appeals related to capital from a CON. I mean, if you have you're getting nothing in your rate and you've taken on, a substantial cost, I would have to say that should meet some definition of financial hardship.
Uh-huh.
Past practice has been that appeals relating to items like CON capital and refiled cost reports and financially disadvantaged facilities, those have been the ones that typically have gotten the most priority in the department. I would hope and think that that probably would not change much.
Okay.
Proposal, but again, we'll see what further information we can get on Friday.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Again, if you have a question, please press 1 now. At this time, I have no further questions in the queue.
Okay. Well, with that said, I want to thank everybody for joining us today. We will be providing a lot more information in the coming days, and certainly if you have questions in the meantime, please feel free to give us a call, drop us an email, and we'll do our best to get your questions answered, and we'll be doing as much as we can to support your grassroots advocacy efforts. As Rich has already indicated, they are of great importance. We can do a certain amount up here in Albany in the Capitol, but we need all of you to be helping us out in the field with the legislators. This is an election year for everyone, so grassroots advocacy is all the more important, and we appreciate your efforts to date, and thank you. And thank you for joining us today. Bye now.